Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, how you doing there, y'all? This is JT. You know who I am. And this is 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you know what time it is. It's time for No Chaser. I am the co-host. And right now, I am the host because my host is not around. And sometimes it be like that. But it is what it is, okay? Since I got the show for now, until further notice, I'm going to run it my way. Let me think what I want to talk about here. Let's talk about this. My thing is sports. My thing is football. So, let's talk about this. Elvis Dumervil. You're saying, who? Why are we talking about this? Well, this is the deal. Supposedly, and it's going to probably go through to the lawyers and whatever else, because the fact is, my man thought he had a contract. They wanted him to take a pay cut. He agreed to take a pay cut. And at the last minute, there was a fax fiasco. And he had to get a signed contract into the NFL league, or into the league, by 4 o'clock. It didn't happen. The league didn't get it until 4:07. Guess what happened to Elvis Dumervil? He's an unrestricted free agent. You know why? Because the Broncos released him. And he is pissed. He's pissed. And I don't blame him. You know, I don't know, you know, why all of a, you know, all of a sudden it comes down to that. But that makes no sense. Definitely doesn't make any sense. And let me do this. because this board has been acting up crazy today, and try to bring in my host in here.
What's happening?
How you doing, my man?
What's up?
You have no idea what I've been going through. You have no clue.
Oh, I believe you. No, I think I do, because it's been one of those days for me too, brother. Trust me.
Well, so, let me tell you, the board was acting up yesterday. It froze up on me. I couldn't do nothing. And in order for me to even halfway work this board now, again today, mm-hmm. I have to keep refreshing the page. I don't know what's going on.
Wow. So we Blog Talk Radio is doing us like that now?
Let me tell you something, man. I didn't know you were there. You know, I'm looking at the board, waiting for you. I said, you know, let me refresh this page.
I knew something was going on because usually you notice right away when I come on. So I was like, okay. I was like, mm-hmm. something must be going on. So I was like, okay, I got you. So
I had to refresh the page, and wow. You had been on it for about 48 seconds. So, I mean, it was crazy. And I can't even, and I don't even want to attempt it now, but I couldn't even stop the music. So I had to lower the music and just let it play.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy.
It is crazy. Now, has it been working? Has it been messing like this on our other shows? On our other?
Yesterday, it started screwing up. I couldn't even play the closeout music. I just had to say goodbye.
So why don't we somebody, is there a way to tell these people about this, or what? I mean, what is this?
Yeah, there is a way, yes, but
Vic has to do it.
Well, no, I think I can do it. You know, it's just a matter of me taking the time to do it. And I didn't have the time yesterday, and I've been busy as hell today.
No doubt. I'm pretty sure you would have done it if you had the time. I just asked because I just didn't know. You're familiar with the board and things like that more than I am. But, you know, it's kind of, I know it's frustrating because sometimes we have our good days, we go on these streaks, and then we go on these streaks where it's like, okay, what's going on with this?
Mm-hmm.
So I know it can be difficult. But, yeah, I heard you talking about Doomerville. For all you guys, I'm Mac. I'm the host of the show, No Chaser. We are brought to you by Trinity Web Solutions. TrinityWebSolutions.org is our sponsor. Please stop by TrinityWebSolutions.org. We have where you can do it yourself websites for yourself or your business. We have email. We have domains. We have some of everything. We even have the same thing as Constant Contact with lower prices. So, please go over and check out TrinityWebSolutions.org if you have any need for any business or for sites or anything on the online that you want to do or express yourself or have a web. TrinityWebSolutions.org is the place to be. You can go on there and sign up today. All right? Now, I heard you talking about Doomerville, and that's kind of crazy. So I was like, wow, you know. You know, I think from what the story was, and this is what I heard on ESPN, it didn't go that they released him. What happened was they restructured the contract to cut it to 8, from 12 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
And the agent or Doomerville, it was on them to fax over the redone contract before 4 p.m. They didn't receive, Denver didn't receive it until 4:06, which was too late. So they had to cut him because it was too late to submit it, and they were also taking on the contract of Wes Welker. So which means by 4 o'clock, they would have had to give him, I think, a bonus, or would have had to pay him his salary if it wasn't done by four o'clock. He was due money.
Mm-hmm.
So they cut him because they didn't turn in the paperwork of the restructure in order to keep him. So
okay. That's
how it was explained on ESPN. So I don't know how I came across this because I thought the same thing, but then I realized as soon as they said that he had to have the paperwork in, I knew. I was like, that wasn't on. I knew immediately it wasn't on Denver because it said the paperwork had to be in by 4 o'clock, and it was 3:25. In fact, let me I can. Okay, I can read it to you right here. Denver Broncos defensive end Elmas Dubovil agreed to a reduced salary, but was released by the team after the paperwork for the new contract was not filed with the league office in time, Friday, according to sources. Dubovil's 2013 contract of $12 million was set to be guaranteed at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, but he agreed to take a pay cut to $8 million. According to a source, both parties reached an agreement at 3:25 p.m. Eastern Time on a restructured contract, but the team did not get a fax from Dumerville's agent until 4:06 Eastern Time, so it had to release him, according to the source. So, because from what I understand, that's what it said. I won't read the rest of it because some of that stuff goes back over stuff that was already talked about. But it's like, it cleared out cap space. From what I heard, he was owed money. Like by 4 o'clock, he was that's what it was. Dumerville's 2013 salary of $12 million was set to be guaranteed at 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So when you cut it to eight, you basically shaved off what, $4 million?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So had he got the paperwork in by 4 o'clock, he would have been guaranteed the eight instead of the 12. Well, you can imagine if it goes past 4 o'clock, the league ain't got it. Guess what? That means your salary would have been guaranteed. So they had to cut it. Because otherwise, after 4 o'clock, it would have been official. According to the contract, they would have had to give him 12.
Right.
Right. So, and like they said, they don't know if it was, for me, I ask, if this is an agent who's experienced, why would you let that happen? Why would you allow that to happen to your client? And the only thing I can think is there's two reasons. One is either you did this to be slick, hoping maybe he slip up and you get the $12 million, or incompetence. But like I said, I don't think it was. I mean, when it's on an agent to get the paperwork to them and get it and them to get it to the office by 4 p.m. I mean, I don't think it's that hard. So for me, I think either it was on purpose. Or it could have been that maybe they found somebody who said, I'll give you a better deal. And could have said, hey, screw it. But I can't imagine that because why would you just waste your time faxing in the thing?
Exactly.
So I just think it was incompetence. And I'll be honest with you, if I was Dumerville and I wanted to stay and I wanted that $8 million and this guy did it at 4:06, he wouldn't be my agent anymore. At 4:06, he'd be fired.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I said, I don't know what but I heard what you said, but I didn't know but I knew it wasn't like, if Dumerville's mad, I want to hear his side of the story. So I'm not saying,
right.
I'm just saying what ESPN is saying and what I've heard on NFL Network, But somebody's going to win.
Well, supposedly, I went to a different website, and supposedly the agent's saying that they sent the fax at 3:55. And that was at the same time as the Broncos were cutting him, just to be on the safe side because they hadn't received anything up until that point. So we'll see what happens. I mean,
right.
I can see some lawyers jumping into this one. So
no, I can see that. I can see that happening.
Mm-hmm.
But what's going to prove everything is the dates on the faxes.
Times and dates. Oh, the time.
Right.
Time. Definitely.
Right. The time
mm-hmm.
and the date, the times that are on the fax will determine who's lying.
Mm-hmm.
So it won't be no hiding unless you say you ain't got no money. I mean, unless
mm-hmm.
you're saying you ain't got no paperwork, but you got to
right.
have some.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe that. So,
well, my man, I got to ask you something here. I got to ask you something. You know what I'm going to be asking you. You know what I'm going to be asking. At least you should know.
What about Reggie Bush?
Absolutely.
That's a win-win. I love it. I love the move. I like the move before. I wanted us to do something before they even got him because I was like, my thing was either Steven Jackson or him, but I like Bush better because Bush don't have all that muscle to pull. Even though,
mm-hmm.
don't get me wrong, Jackson's a strong runner, but that's not a guy. I mean, he's good, but he's a pure running back. He can't do the things. he can't do the things that Reggie Bush can do. The change of pace. I mean, he can, but you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Sure, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
He's just not as evasive. Let's put it that way. So, no, I love the move. I like what we've done. I don't agree with Chris Houston being signed because I thought our secondary was some garbage. Yes, we have a defensive end. Yes, we have a new safety. But Chris Houston was getting burned like he was getting burned all the time too.
Mm-hmm.
In that back, and I don't know why they re-signed him, because I was like, I didn't see him stopping nobody. Yeah, he was a strong tackler, young guy, but you know, I would have liked to seen us go into the draft and get another DB. But you know, it is what it is. We got to do more. Our line is fine with Fairley, Sue, and you got Fairley, Sue, and you got the new defensive end, and with other pieces that we got, I mean, we should do well. But I still don't like our secondary. I don't think it's strong enough. And like I said, we got a new safety, and that's cool too. But you know, as I said, this is the business of football. But I like what we've done so far. I mean, I can't be mad at us. You know, it's a good thing. We signed who's the other guy we signed today too? We signed somebody else to a 2-year deal too. But you know, I like it. You know, I hope we do better. I mean, it's definitely going to open us up. What I'm hoping is that we will go into the draft and get another wide receiver to make them have to play Calvin Johnson honest.
Well, I got a question for you, my man. There's a guy out there, and I don't understand why people aren't grabbing on him. I don't understand. Maybe he's pricing himself out of the market. But he was a big-time receiver with one of your division rivals. I'm talking about Greg Jennings.
Yeah, but I think Greg Jennings is – I think his issue is age.
Really?
And nobody wants to give him, you know, that kind of money at that age. You know how they are. It doesn't matter. Even if you are good at what you do, they just believe in, you know – You know they believe. You know they believe in, like, oh, he's 36, he's too old. Even if you're producing,
Greg Jennings, he's 29.
No. I didn't say that. But I'm saying, yeah. But remember, everybody now is, you know. But remember, he's been. I will say this: he's been injured a lot, missed a lot of time. So that could be one thing. You know how they like people who are not injury prone. They'll take chances. And I just think, really, to be honest with you, I think teams are sitting back and waiting. And going to get people on the cheap when they have nothing else out there. Once it slows down and there's certain people out there and nobody touches them, you can get them for the cheap. And trust me, every team plays the same game. The people they really want go on day one, day two, day three. Now it's getting to the point where now it's like all the guys that are still sitting are either talking to somebody or they're either talking to somebody or they are, you know, or like I said, they're making, you know, they're going to make their deal. Excuse me, they're going to make their deal 2 weeks down the line, and, you know, they're going to get them for the cheap.
Well, let me tell you something. If I'm the general manager of the Houston Texans, I'd be jumping all over him. I don't understand it.
I just really think, honestly, that the NFL is just not going to throw that kind of crazy money around. I think honestly, this is just me. I really get the sense from what I've seen the last few days that everybody's getting who they really want and who's proven. And they're not throwing big money at people who are like, okay, he's a flash in the pan 1 year. It's like everybody who's been somewhere and has a resume they're taking. Not saying it's a good idea, and it probably is because you got experience. But I really honestly think that most teams are going to mix experience. And I think everybody's waiting for the draft because there are a lot of wide receivers in the draft. I'm just saying there are a lot of wide receivers deep in the draft.
Yeah, but
quarterbacks aren't that deep. Certain positions just aren't that deep. I mean, I watched the combine, and it was like it's just not – to me, and I could be wrong, to me it's not a deep draft. It's not a draft where you can go like, man, this draft class is going to be like, woo.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
But at wide receiver and at running back is deep. That's what I'm saying. So I'm not saying that, you know, and remember, if I draft somebody, I can pay them on the cheap. Even in slotting, they stopped the crazy rookie contract. So I'm saying, I just think that in this day and age, the NFL and teams are starting to be more conservative. They're more cold-blooded. Everybody's being more careful with their dollars and what. Because I've never seen so many two-year deals and three-year deals in my life.
Mm-hmm.
One-year deals. You know, everybody's like, I'll give you this, but you're only going to get me for 2 years. You're going to get me for a year. You know, and what they're guaranteeing isn't even a lot. Some are when you're in your mid 20s, and then some are not. So you know, I mean, like I said, I mean, the NFL and all them. You're saying Brandon Jennings is what, 29? You said
Greg Jennings is 29.
Right, 29.
29.
So what do you think NFL thinks when a guy is 29 years old? They start to think they're old. I mean, I've heard it too many times. They think when you get out of your 20s, you're just old. Everybody who's 25, 26, oh, yeah, we'll throw the money at them, long-term deal. But when you get 29, 30, or when you're 30 and over, they think you ain't, you know. And you notice they always mention that he turns 30 in September, you know, or, you know, stuff like that. And you're just going like, you know, which to me, I don't think you're old when you turn that, even in football. But at the same time, Greg Jennings, you know, they're probably looking at it as Greg Jennings has been injured, missed a lot of games. 29 years old, you know how the NFL is. They're, you know, like anything else, like all sports, they're meat markets, you know. Moo, moo, moo. You know, let's see what kind of cows you can get over here and how many cows mm-hmm. you can get over there, you know. Mm-hmm. And they look at you and they poke and they prod and they look at your stuff. I mean, you know, like I said, I think Greg James is a great wide receiver. Would
mm-hmm.
I like to see it? Would I like him in Detroit? No.
Wow, really?
But let me say why. I would rather have a young stud guy, if we're going to do it, and get him in on the cheap, let him prove himself, and put him on the other side of Calvin Johnson and bring him up.
Wait a minute now. That's just me. Listen to what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather have a young stud improve himself. So you're pretty much flipping the coin. This guy may prove himself. He may be good, or he may not be bad. You got a stud wide receiver on one side.
Right.
You got
right.
a stud quarterback throwing a ball to that wide receiver.
Right.
And in order to get double and triple coverage off that wide receiver, you
mm-hmm.
need somebody that's going to be a threat, not a toss of the coin on the other side. Greg Jennings
yeah.
is an experienced wide receiver and
Absolutely.
A definitely deep threat.
Absolutely.
And you see what Roddy White and Julio Jones, how much havoc they play when they go up against defenses. That's
right,
what you're looking for.
But how long? But Julio Jones came out the gate as a rookie doing it. He's only been in the league, Julio Jones, what, 2 years? So what I'm saying to you,
this is his third year, I think.
Right. So what I'm saying to you is, so that's what I'm trying to say. I'm saying when we have a chance, get a young guy. We don't have to pay right now a lot of money. He comes in for 1 or 2 years with one of the best wide receivers in the league. I'm not saying that Greg Jennings is a bad guy or I don't want him because of anything personal with him. I'm saying if we're starting out with all these young guys, a young team, a young quarterback, a wide receiver, a young running back, I'm saying let's plug in a guy we're going to have around for years with Calvin and now we have the advantage of having him. So guess what? If we get a top wide receiver and he turns out to be like a Julio Jones when he comes out the gate, boom. Well, guess what? Now we got that threat on the other side. We're getting him for the cheap. He proves himself for 2 years. He comes under the tutelage of Calvin Johnson, one of the best there is. Now we can roll. Now, with Greg Jennings, you might have, what, 2 years, maybe three? I'd rather have 4 years, 5 years. Down the line. I'm just saying I'd rather have a guy around longer. So I'm
mm-hmm.
not saying that NFL is wrong about what they're doing to Jennings. Now, if we had no wide receiver or no number one wide receiver, I'd be the first one to say, you know what? Yeah, we need Greg Jennings. I'd be the first one to say it. But the fact that we have one who's double team and triple team and still gets the numbers, now I'm saying, okay, let's pull the pressure. Let's make it one-on-one and put another stud on the other side that we can keep around for years And guess what? Now we're putting him under the tutelage of a guy who's one of the best, humble guy, good guy, runs precise routes, great guy. Put him alongside of him, and now we got two guys who are all young teams that are all coming up together. You know, we got enough time to let these other contracts run out, not Calvin's, but these other guys that we're signing right now, defense, offense, whatever. Reggie Bush will be gone by that time. Now we can pass the money over to this young guy, and we can keep moving forward. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm just thinking more long-term than short-term because I want to win now, but at the same time, I know it's, hey, I'm not one of these people who's pissed off at the Lions. I mean, I was frustrated because they fell back, but I knew why,
mm-hmm.
which I'd rather be, I can understand, I'd rather be disappointed because, but see, I understood what happened. We don't have no secondary. We can't stop nobody. That's why we lost all those games last year, because we got exposed.
Mm-hmm.
The first year, the Lions snuck up on everybody. Ooh, Calvin Johnson. You know, everybody snuck up on him. That's when we went 10-4, went to the playoffs, because nobody expected it. Everybody was like, oh, my gosh, you know. But then the second year, like everything else, people say, okay, we know what's coming now. So now we're going to double-team him, and we're going to make your quarterback throw to other people, and them they're going to have to beat us. And, of course, Jahvid Best being out, which was a big blow to us last year also, because we couldn't throw to that guy who could catch it in the middle of the field and make people miss and get down the field and can catch and run and do both. So we didn't have that last year. We had running back committee, and the running backs we had were terrible. They were average at best, you know. So I know why, and that's why I'm really not mad about it. I'm more frustrated, but I'm not angry about it. I would be
okay.
Angry if we had a complete team like your Houston team, and we had that much talent, and we had the record that we had this year, then I'd be mad. Because then I'd be like, there's no excuse, because we have all the tools. But we don't have it all yet, and I know that. So
well,
Jimmy
well,
should be gobbled up by somebody.
Well,
you know,
speaking of that, we were talking about that, because I just refreshed the page I'm on, and he is with your division rival,
who?
The Minnesota Vikings.
Who?
Greg Jennings got signed to a 5-year contract with the Minnesota Vikings.
Oh, okay, great. That was the answer to Percy Harvin.
Hmm.
Well, to Percy Harvin.
No. I think you know, and I saw this guy last year, and at the times that the Percy Harvin was hurt, he's going to be in his second year. He's a Percy Harvin type, probably same type of almost same
oh,
type
you're
of
talking
body.
About
Jarius Wright.
Oh, Jarius Wright. Okay.
Jarius.
I know there was another. I know there was another wide receiver. No, I'm thinking about Green Bay. I'm lunching.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, because they got a lot. Because Green Bay has a lot of good wide receivers up and
oh,
up.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's why I
oh,
laugh
yeah.
at. That's why I'm laughing at the people who are spelling doom and gloom for Baltimore. Because I'm sitting there like, yeah, they picking them clean, but I said, but what y'all don't understand is, I dig what they're doing. You got your quarterback. Your defensive
yeah.
guys retired. Yes, these guys will go. You couldn't keep everybody. And I agree with you. You can't keep all these guys. You had to let some of them go. And the thing about it is, but you got to remember, we don't know we don't know about the young guys that they had, that this group last year and the last 2 years had with them, that had they brought along that we haven't heard of yet, or we haven't really seen them play yet. And next year could be a surprise. They could be like, oh, my God, where'd this guy come from? Man, where'd this guy come from? And that's what I think is happening, because Ozzie Newsome is not panicking. They're not panicking. The fans are. But I've been around long enough to look at football and go like, yeah, it looks like it's spelling doom and gloom for them. But I don't really think so, because this stuff is not happening like Baltimore's going like, oh, my God, we lost him. And, oh, my God, we lost him. You know, from what all the reports I expected to lose Kruger. They expected
mm-hmm.
to lose. I mean, they said the one guy was a surprise. The one
Ellerby.
Right, Ellerby was a surprise. You know, but those things happen. But like I said, I bet what you're going to see, you're not going to see the same Baltimore Ravens you saw last year. You're not going to see maybe the record reflected. But do I think they're going to have a complete collapse? Heck no. I mean, you still got Suggs. You still got, you know, a nucleus, but you're defensively, you know, now if, and I'm going to be honest with you, even if People were saying, like, even if what's the name leaves, what's his name, Ed Reed leaves, you know, that would be a real blow. And I'm like, man, yeah, it would be. Don't get me wrong, Hall of Fame guy. But at the same time, I guess I look at it this way, and I guess I finally got to the point where I realized that, you know what, at some point you gotta start over. At some point, you can't just keep patching. Because that's the problem with the Redskins. I'll probably get lynched for this, but I don't really care. But that was the problem with them for a while. Not this year and not last year. But remember all those free agents they used to get and throw all these guys in there, and then it go. And it was because you didn't have no camaraderie. You had no camaraderie. You had no team chemistry. And you just throw people together. So for me, I just think you have to at some point as a team face and say, you know what, it's time to move on. Because here's the thing. If the same moves that happened with New England, nobody would have batted it out. Nobody would have said nothing.
I don't know about that, man. I mean, you're a Super Bowl champion, and usually the Super Bowl champion, they do lose a few players, but it seemed like a pretty big purge of talent leaving the Baltimore. Right after you win the Super Bowl. You don't think that a Super Bowl winning team would purge players and not sign players that they had help them win the Super Bowl. That blows my mind that you got, I think, both their cornerbacks are not with the team anymore.
Right.
Ed Reed may be gone shortly. They lost one of their big, what they were anticipating, one of their linebackers to take a spot. He went.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some linemen. They had Anquan Boldin, who helped them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a statistic. I don't know, and I've said this before, and I found it out. I forgot where I saw it, but it's a valid statistic. Joe Flacco threw to Anquan Boldin and completed passes to Anquan Boldin 61% of the time.
Yep.
61% of the time.
Yeah.
That means that's his go-to guy. And they just out and out trade him, in my opinion, for a bag of peanuts. Six-round
right.
pick. That's
right.
crazy.
Right.
That's the type of things that you see the Ravens doing. The first thing they did was trade away Boldin for a six-round pick, which was, like, mind-boggling to me.
The Boldin one surprised me, but then it didn't. Because I'm willing to bet you Boldin wasn't taking no discount.
No.
Boldin wanted a certain amount of money.
Right.
And he wasn't going to do it. So here's what I'm saying. I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you. That hurts. Boldin is the one person that I see that they lost that hurts more than all the other ones.
Wow, really? Okay.
To me.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
I know what I saw what he did last year. I mean, he caught everything but a cold. I mean, he just caught it, and he was great with it.
Right.
But what I'm saying to you is that, but at the same time, for them to trade him for a six-round draft pick meant we ain't going to draw this out. We're not going to argue with you. Obviously, Boldin didn't want to stay, because if he did, everybody else if other people take pay cuts and stuff like that, he wasn't going to take a pay cut. When they traded him for a six-round, I knew. I was like, he's not going to capitulate. He's not going to do what they asked him to do. He's not going to take the discount. They know it. He knows it. You know what? Let him go. Now, would that hurt? Of course that'll hurt. But at the same time, why draw it out? For me, I really think that I really honestly think that the Ravens know what they're doing. Not saying that it'll result in the Super Bowl or result them going to playoffs or anything like that. They may fall off. But you have to rebuild at some point, and I just think you can't afford to pay everybody. There's no way you can tell me you give Joe Flacco that kind of money and you was going to pay Anquan Boldin the money he wanted. There was no way you're going to sign anybody else. There's no way you were going to sign those other people. Somebody was going to be the odd people out. Somebody was going to be the odd man out. And guess what? You know how they look at it now? Guess what? Now we got more money to sign another guy. Now we got more money to get younger and bring some other people in. You have to have that mentality and look at it, you know. I think Baltimore's going to be fine. Do I think they're going to repeat? No. Do I think they're going to get to the playoffs? Maybe. But it's nothing assured. The only thing that's assured is that I don't think they're going to be down for long, because Ozzie Newsom has shown a knack for getting good talent. I mean, they've never been without talent. They remind me of New England, Pittsburgh Steelers. They always got new guys coming in and replacing old guys. It's like a training camp. They just run people in and out, in and out, in and out. They're constantly in contention. And I hope that one day that Detroit gets to be like that, because I admire that. I do want to say one thing, though, while I'm here on the phone, is that, you know, I heard a lot of people say a lot of disparaging stuff about, about Cleveland and Cleveland Browns fans. I just want to say this. I watched the other night on NFL Network, I don't know if you've seen the program before, that's Football Life, and it was about Cleveland 95, the last year they were before Art Modell left. And when I watched it, after watching it, not that it didn't change me, but after watching it, I say to anyone who is not a Cleveland Browns fan, who's critical of their attitude towards Art Modell, toward his death, towards him, period, I'm going to admit to you, I'm a Christian man, but I'm going to be honest with you. If my owner, William Clay Ford, did what that man did and took my team, and then 5 years later he wins a championship in another city and then wins another one, and then you see all the disciples of Bill Belichick all in either general manager positions, offensive coordinators, head coaches, and they're winning, and you have all those people on that staff, and you see what that man did, you can't tell me, I don't care what nobody says, Cleveland deserves to feel whatever way they want to feel about that man, because I'm going to tell you, William Clay Ford took my team and left, I'd have felt the same way. I'd have hated him too.
You would hate him, even though
he was trying to.
I think he wanted to get a new stadium, and they wouldn't help foot the bill, and so he decided to up and leave.
Still, you can't just rip. You can't. I mean, I understand he wanted a new stadium, but at the same time, that would you say?
I'm listening.
She said, "No, my wife is a Cleveland person. She's here. She said that's not the reason why." She said, what was the reason? Oh, okay. She said, point blank, she said he wanted to win, and he figured he knew they weren't going to win in Cleveland, so he wanted to go somewhere else.
Okay.
Because, I can't go against it, because she lived it. She was there during that
mm-hmm.
time.
Yeah,
and,
but you can't fault the owner if it's a losing mentality. And no matter what you do, it sometimes there's just an aura around an organization
that needs a
change of venue.
Right.
And I guess
look at all the teams that have had losing records who don't have no championships. Everybody don't do that. If anybody's gonna give Art Modell that excuse. Then we would have had five or six different stories about other 31 teams being just pulled out and leaving. But the two times we've had it has been Baltimore, the Colts, and Cleveland. I know LA has had it before, but LA has never been without a team. They've just been without a team in LA or Oakland. It's just been, but they've always had a team. So I guess what I'm trying to say to you is that I can't. My thing is this: if it's about winning, stay the course. Here's the thing: once you watch it, Jerry, I watch it. Then you come back to me and you tell me, you know what? He was right, because that's what the whole object of the thing was. Not only showing what happened and how it ruined the team, but when you look at the people who are on Belichick's staff.
Well, I know.
You realize that if he had just been patient, he would have won it. He would have won a couple of them, a few of them.
You had your coach, who's now the head coach of the Detroit Lions. Yeah,
right.
You had. I'm trying
Mike
to think.
Mike Tannenbaum.
Yeah,
you had Scioli.
Yeah, you had.
Kansas City, and you got two general managers at least out of three general managers out of it.
Right,
you had a coach at Alabama. You got one of the greatest college coaches ever winning at Alabama.
Right.
You have. I'm just looking at this and I'm going like, Are you freaking kidding me? Because, see, I'll be honest with you. Until I watched it, I didn't realize the staff that he had.
Oh, yeah, he had a hell of a staff.
Now I didn't know. And I'm sitting there going, like, are you serious?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And to be honest with you, like I said, I don't care what the reason is. As a fan, I'm speaking from a fan. I'm not speaking as a business person. As a fan, I don't give a doggone what your reason is. You better work it out, find a way, call strike, bring your case to the fans, bring your case to the people, do whatever. But as in most deals, let's be honest, as in most deals, nobody, owners especially, are not completely transparent about what really goes on in these negotiations. You hear bits and pieces from the media, but you really don't. So what I'm saying to you is, let William Clay Ford take the Lions and take everything from us and move somewhere else. Slim, I hate you. Like, Slim, you don't take my team. We grew up. I mean, I'm just saying, I know how it was. Look, I know how it was when Detroit moved out of the Pontiac Silverdome and moved to Detroit. I remember when the Detroit Tigers tore down the old Tiger Stadium that Babe Ruth played in and tore that joint down and built the new Tiger Stadium, how emotional and how that was. People going out there getting bricks and stuff. This stuff is a part of the cities that they're in, especially you talking about Cleveland. When you talk about a Cleveland, you're talking about the bedrock, the first group of teams to start the league. And then you take them and go somewhere else. I'm like, Slim, I'm sorry. You take the Lions somewhere else and call them a different name and they start winning championships, I'm pissed. I'm mad. I'm like, man, that's crazy. All because you wanted to win and you weren't patient enough? Come on, man. Miami should have moved by now. Miami should have been moved by now if you're talking about winning. They had Dan Marino for how many years and didn't win squat? You know? I'm saying, look at Buffalo. Buffalo been to the joint, what, four times and lost every one?
Yeah, and Buffalo, right. I think they're still up in the air whether they're going to move to Toronto or not.
I understand that, but what I'm trying to say, Jerry, is everybody's not taking that attitude. You stay the course and you try to do what you can unless it's an extreme circumstance. I can understand if it was the place is falling around you, it's unsafe for you to sit in or stay there. Come on, man. You can find a way to do it.
Oh, boy. You got her fired up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She said they had the money to do the stadium. She said it was just an excuse. He didn't want to be there. He wanted to be in Baltimore. And, you know, they showed in there where he had said, I think they said he wanted to win or something. So, you know, in the program. So I would just challenge you and anybody else to just, if you catch it again, the reruns on NFL Network, please watch it. I DVR'd it to my DVR and watched it. And I'm telling you, after I watched it, I was like, that's terrible. And I just challenge anybody. I mean, like I said, for me, I think it's easy for other people in other NFL cities and people to sit and laugh and say the Cleveland people are crazy or say the Cleveland people are stupid or they're cruel because, you know, I mean, or they're idiots or they're just bitter people. No, I would challenge anybody. Till you've had your team taken out of your city and experienced that, you can't possibly know what that feels like. It's easy to sit and throw rocks at somebody else when you don't have to go through it. You know, that's all I say. And I say those people can feel any way they want because I'm going to tell you, somebody did it to my team, I know I'd be pissed. I'd be mad. I'd be hurt a long time for that. I mean, I wouldn't like William Clay Ford at all. So, you know, I heard that idiot, and I'm going to say it, yes, that idiot, Brian Mitchell, calling Cleveland people idiots and stuff because of the day when they announced that, you know, he had died, and a guy came on the radio and said, you know, the sunshine a little brighter, the birds chirping a little sweeter, you know, since he's been gone. I was just like, dang, you know. But I understand how they feel. You had your heart ripped out. Look how Baltimore felt when they got taken, the Colts got taken and went to Indianapolis. Look, they didn't even know it was happening. They got done in the middle of the night. At least this guy told Cleveland. He told them and then tried to take the colors. The NFL had to step in and make the man leave the colors in. I'm just like I said, for me, you know, I just want to say before you judge Cleveland Browns fans or Cleveland fans, period, you have to go through what they went through. And I say the same thing about LeBron, but everybody always makes it simplistic. Everybody always says, well, Cleveland's just mad because LeBron left. I said, no, it's not that he left. It's the way he left. It was disrespectful to the team. It was disrespectful to the city. And they were pissed. Because I don't care what nobody says. If LeBron had did like every other athlete, thank the owner, thank people, just like they do on Twitter when they leave. What do all these football players do when they left and resign somewhere like that? Hey, so-and-so, the old city. Hey, so-and-so. You know, thanks for all the memories. Thanks for the opportunity. I love you guys. It'll always be home. You say something nice, contrite, and you move on. Fans don't get mad about leaving. They know what it is. The fans aren't stupid. But when you do something what LeBron did and the way he did it, that was it. Just like when I was doing Facebook, I put on there the day Peyton Manning left Indianapolis and went to Denver and had that press conference. I put on my Facebook, note to LeBron, this is how you lead the right way in a professional way. Whether you like that man, that owner or not, whether he gave you another contract or gave you the $90 million or said, no, we're going to pass, you respect that man because that's where you spent your time and you move on. And that's how you do. So for me, Cleveland fans been through a lot. I don't begrudge them the way they feel. I just don't. They're a blue-collar, hard-working city, and they've lost a lot. They haven't been successful. I mean, think about it. Michael Jordan tortured them. Ernest Byner fumbled at the line when they had the one time to go to the Super Bowl. You know, you get the hometown boy to be your guy, and he basically dishes you guys and does it unprofessionally and does it, you know, not the right way. Then you got a guy who comes along, an owner who takes the team from the city and rolls out and goes to Baltimore. So I'm saying when you look at the whole totality of it, ain't nobody bitter. But you tell me one city that's had all that happen to them, and then you come back and tell me they shouldn't feel bitter the way they do about LeBron and about Art Modell. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Everybody ain't went through it, so it's really hard. It's like, you know, I mean, let me and you try to attempt to tell women how it is to have children. Yeah, wouldn't that be a radio show? Imagine you take calls. I bet you we wouldn't be taking calls on that too much longer because we can sit and read about it and study about it. But unless you've actually done it, you can't possibly know what that's like. So, you know, that's why I tell everybody, you know, till you go through it, then you can point a finger, then you can judge, and then you can say all that. But it's easy to say that when your team is safe and snugly and right there in your city, and you can buy tickets and go down and see them. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, but I digress. But one of the last things I do want to mention, just to mess with you and Vic. I know.
Oh boy, here we go.
Later, is
here
that
we go.
CPAC is in town, baby. Conservatives are in town and in D.C. and they're talking, and I love it. So I just want to let everybody know: if you're in the Washington D.C. area and you are a conservative, take your ass down to CPAC. And go hear some knowledge, some real common sense knowledge, and piss all your liberal friends off. That's a public service announcement. I just want
yeah.
to get that. I just
yeah,
want
okay.
to get that in.
Yeah, okay. yeah, okay.
I haven't met you in a long
just
time.
Make sure,
I break,
just, just make sure when you go to listen that you lean your head to the left so you can hear out of your right ear.
Oh, that's terrible. Oh, man, that's terrible. That is terrible. But that's all right. That's okay. However you hear it, that's fine. Let me ask you this question, Jerry.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do want to ask you this, and I want to ask you this in all honesty.
Sure.
Have you watched the whole complete speech of the prayer breakfast when I can't remember his name. Good Lord. One of our top surgeons in the United States. I can't remember his name. You know who I'm talking about.
No.
Oh.
No, I don't.
He talked at the prayer breakfast to Obama, and I can't remember his name. I keep wanting to say Dr. James Andrews, and I know it's not James Andrews.
Dr. Ben Carson?
Yes.
Did
okay. you see that?
No, I just happened, when you said prayer breakfast, I just Googled it, and Ben Carson.
I want you to watch that when we get off the air. Watch it and tell me what you think. I like he's a conservative, if you didn't know. And what he said at the prayer breakfast, a lot of liberals got mad and said it was disrespectful to the president. But he never was disrespectful to the president. But he said what he had to say. And there were common sense approaches to different things. And it was biblical. And I never understood this, why people said this was not the time for him to talk about these things. And I'm like, okay, if you had a prayer breakfast, obviously you guys are talking about God. Obviously you're talking about Christian values. So why would you not talk about conservative values and how you should handle the economy and how you should handle certain things in a biblical sense? So, but I looked at it and I found it not to be disrespectful at all. So I'm asking you as a liberal to see if that's something that you found, like, I want you to hear, listen to it in its entirety, and then come back and tell me, you know, that's real disrespectful, because I just thought it was crazy. But anyway, the only thing I say right now is I just hope we solve this. I hope we solve this budget mess, this whole thing, because I'm sick of the debt. And, you know, all I'll say is I hope that the president is genuine about reaching out to Republicans and trying to work something out. And I hope this is not something where it's just staged and he says, I tried to work with you guys, and then because they wouldn't go along with your
I just happened to catch, because I watch and see very little news on TV or through the internet, but I did happen to catch this, and I didn't really read into it, but I did happen to catch, I guess, the headlines of it, or a short piece of it, that the your side, the conservative side, is in order for Obama to get any kind of concessions from the Republicans, he's got to change the
he's got to repeal Obamacare. Or
yeah,
what?
Yeah.
Now I will say this, just so you know, all fair. I personally think that was kind of a dumb move on Republican part, on conservative part, and I say that because, for one, it ain't gonna happen. It was unrealistic, so why put it in there? All it was doing was to agitate. I understand he was being honest and saying we want to. You can say I want to repeal, but I don't think. It wasn't gonna serve a real purpose by putting it in there and saying we're gonna do this, and we'll do this, and we're gonna repeal Obamacare. You're not gonna do it. For one, you're not gonna do it while that man's sitting there with the veto power. Number one. Even if you got the votes for it, which 9 times out of 10 you're not, it's just not going to happen. So I don't know why I was included.
Well, you know, come on, Mac. You know why I was included, for the simple fact is they weren't going. This is just something
it's
they put out there because they weren't going to concede anything. They were going to compromise anything, and it was just something to put out there. So, come on.
I don't think it was. It served any purpose, and I don't think it was right. I think it was a dumb move. I do, because I think Paul Ryan could have presented the budget and presented the numbers and everything else, and didn't have to put that in there, because it's just not going to happen. So it's kind of like a wasted bullet. You know why put that bullet in there? That wasn't going to happen.
That's just the way your party is, though, man. That's just the way your party is.
But to be honest, I
applaud you for saying that was a dumb move. But
I wouldn't have done it because I would have known it was wasted time because it's not going to happen.
Right, but then why even go through that drill? Why even put it out there?
And that's just
showing you how resistance they are to do any kind of compromise. When you say something like that.
But let's be honest. If you want to keep it real, all I'll say to you is this: I can find. I mean, here's my problem. My problem is when a president says that $17 trillion is sustainable, that bothers me. It's still a debt. It's still piled up on us. It's more than what we take in. You know, so that bothers me. But what I will say is this: both sides grapple. But I will say this. That was a dumb move on his part as far as that's concerned. But at the same time, let's be real, both sides are not compromising. And I think the problem is that, well, one, Obama's beholden to his base. And I think, and I'll be honest with you, by now, I believe he really believes in the stuff that he's doing. I don't necessarily believe he's doing this for his base. I really believe he's doing this because this is what he fundamentally believes. And that's fine. I respect the fact that you can fundamentally believe. I fundamentally disagree. But as I said, the things that I have a problem with Obama about are one, is that he thinks that the debt is no big deal, which I think you got to be part Looney Tune to think that that's not a big deal. But fine, if that's what you think, that's fine. You know, we have to start, we have to cut. Like I said, for me, we have to cut this stuff. We have to cut this stuff, and we have to cut the spending. The sequester, I think, is a good thing. It's not pretty. I'm pretty sure down the line it's not going to be nice. But you know what? At some point, somebody got to cut it, somebody got to do it. And guess what? If both parties ain't going to do it on their own, good. Let it happen. Now, but the only thing I say is offer the flexibility, which conservatives have said, look, we'll pass a bill that will give you the flexibility of figuring out where that money comes from. So that way it's not, you can find the most important. And I think that was a good thing to do. And I think they should have took it, but Obama didn't want to do that. He didn't want the choice to make it. He just wanted to make it and I believe Obama's trying to make this look as painful as possible to get public sentiment on his side for them to do a deal and back off the sequester. But to be honest with you, I think the sequester is a good thing. Because the two sides weren't doing nothing before it happened. They weren't. And I'm saying both. I'm not saying just
both
sides.
But they're still not doing anything. They're still bantering back and forth.
I guess what I'm trying to say to you is that the cuts are happening, though. They're automatic. So I guess what I'm trying to say to you is that it's better than still sitting here grappling and nothing happening. Now, would I like us to cut more from entitlements? Yes, I would. You know, I'd like them to, but will it happen? I don't know. But all I know is this. I'm in agreement with you on we need to do more, but this is the way the system was set up, and both sides are taking advantage of it and using it how they can. You know, do I think that it's all on Obama? I think most of it is because he's the leader, but at the same time, I don't think either side is compromising.
He needs the majority in the Congress to be able to do things. If the majority of Congress keeps resisting everything he tries to do, regardless of it's you agree with it or not, then nothing's going to happen.
I just think he needs to sit down. I mean, honestly, this is just me. Now, this may come as a shock to you, but I honestly believe that all the conservatives are looking for is, look, it's a difference in words. If I say to you, Jerry, we need to cut the radio budget, okay? We're spending $40,000 a year, you know, but we really don't need limousines. Let's cut the limousines out. We can ride the bus. We just got to get up an hour earlier and get to the station. Okay, we don't need this. We don't need that. Me and you can sit down and do that. Okay.
Okay.
The problem I have is that soon as Republicans or conservatives say we want to cut entitlement.
Wait a minute.
What the left hears is, oh my God, you're gonna throw grandma out. All this stuff, they always make it like they scream. Like, we don't want nobody to change that.
I'm not saying you
or people personally. What I'm saying is the people on the Hill see that as we don't want to cut entitlements. But yet, the fact is when you look through it, you see the waste, fraud, and abuse. When you really look for it and see it, it's waste, fraud, and abuse. We hear about it on the news. We hear about people who are riding limos and rich and got food stamps who don't need it. I know people personally when I go to the summer leagues who deal in that. Sell the EBT car. So when conservatives say let's cut it, they're not saying let's throw grandma out. What we're saying is let's eliminate the fraud and the waste in the systems. But for some reason, Democrats and liberals don't want to cut it. They don't.
Wait a minute. Now, Now, but that fraud and the waste is usually at the lower of the tier that what the Republican wants to cut out, not up at the upper tier where there's fraud, waste, and abuse at a bigger scale. So it works both.
Why would we cut $5 out of our budget and not go after the $40 and not go after the $1,000? And what I'm saying to you is,
that's not what I'm saying. But that's part of
compromise. When I say, okay, you know what, $5 is a little bit. It's, you know, instead of saying who's bigger and who's smaller, I guess what I'm trying to say to you is, here's my thing. I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're getting at because I know it. But what I'm saying is, part of compromise is if I can't get the big thing, then I'll take what I can get for right now because it still adds up.
But the little man is an easy target. The little person is a very easy target because they're the ones that don't have the clout the big fish have, and the different layers the big fish have before you can get to the big fish. So and that's exactly the analogy I'm making here. You take a company, okay? There's fraud, waste, and abuse in the executive level, but they're going to cut 10 janitors who don't even make a quarter of
but
what
that's
one
not,
of the
but that's not
one
abuse.
Of the one. Wait a minute!
That's not fraud,
wait a minute! They're going to cut 10 janitors that don't make a quarter of what one of the executives that they don't need up top make. But they're going
right.
to cut those 10 janitors. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
But that's not a good analogy though, Jerry. Because
sure it is.
Because you're talking about cutting jobs, and I'm talking about cutting fraud, waste, and abuse as far as something that's being taken that people taking things and getting money and taking things out of a program that's meant for people who really need it and not going and finding it and saying, hey, yo. We're not going to keep letting this go on because guess what? Because Jerry really needs it, but you don't want the guy who's riding the limo. I understand. So what you're saying is the guy who's riding the limo, what I'm saying is you should be for the guy who's getting food stamps and don't need it.
No.
And have that money go towards the person who really needs it, but people who fall through the cracks and the system says they don't qualify.
Well, let me put it this way. You have a doctor. He's accepting Medicare and any kind of government subsidies for his for taking care of whoever.
Mm-hmm.
He's putting his false papers. He's making a boatload of money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
you
got people that are on assistance, and maybe some of them should be on assistance. Maybe some of them shouldn't be on collecting a check on disability. But they're not even making a close to the amount if you take 10 of them. They're not making it close to the amount what this doctor is raking in from fraud, waste, and abuse. So you're going to go after those 10 people, and that doctor is going to go free and clear.
No, you go after the doctor.
Well, you know,
because he's billing Medicare
that's the analogy I'm making. The Republican is thinking, well, we go after these small fish that they have small waste and abuse. And a doctor, we just smack him on the back of his hand and let him go on his merry way.
Jerry, I gotta get one of these days. I'm gonna get my wife on here. When you hear the money that these people see, you see it as unless you're in it, you only assume that it's little guys. What your analogy is correct, but what I'm saying to you is that you go after the doctor. Because the doctor's not making a few hundred. He's not making a few thousand. Slim, Jerry, they're making millions.
I know that.
The doctor's making millions. Right, and that's why you go after the doctor. You shut that. That's where the fraud, waste, and abuse isn't with the people who are using Medicare. That's not what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about legit people who need it. And that's not what the left is talking about. What the left is saying, they're not. If I'm 65 years old and I'm getting Medicare legally, it's time for me to get it and I get it. I'm not fraud. I'm not part of fraud. I'm not part of waste. I'm not part of abuse. I'm
right.
going in there. But if I go to a center and I sit in there all day and play pool and BS and do whatever I do. Meanwhile, the foreign guy who started the place is billing Medicare, saying I'm over there getting exercise and getting massages and billing Medicare and making hundreds of thousands of dollars a month off me being there, yet I'm sitting there not getting massaged, not getting anything, and I'm sitting there, and yes, this stuff happens, it's documented, and then after a few months, you shut down, you done made a few million, you gone. These are foreign people doing it, and so what I'm saying is, when we're talking about million, if we were talking about a few hundred dollars, so I guess what I'm trying to say to you is, I'm saying that that's where we need to start. But when you say that you want to get rid of fraud, waste, and abuse, for some reason it seems like everybody has these differences of what that means. And what I'm saying is, when I say fraud, waste, and abuse, I mean the definition of fraud, waste. I'm talking about getting money but illegally, stealing it because I'm doing something defraudulent to get that money. That needs to be cut out of the system. And then waste. When you look at all the government programs that are duplicated, when you look, they got books out with the stuff from this year. That's waste. Like, I mean, there's a program about $1.2 million to figure out why lesbians are overweight. Come on, Jerry. Jerry, that's the kind of stuff. Right, but Jerry, you laugh, but I'm saying I'm really.
No,
well,
I think
it's funny too. But I'm saying when conservatives say this is what we're talking about, that's all we're talking about. We're not talking about throwing grandma out or cutting some janitors here or cutting janitors there. Janitors aren't. I'm just saying people who are hardworking, people who are getting something that they earned is fine. But what we're not doing is we're not saying okay, do that. What we're saying is let's get rid of fraud, waste, and let's get the people out let's get the money and save it and stop throwing it away and waste it because, let's be honest, all the money we're getting, we're borrowing. So it behooves us to use it wisely.
Well, that's
it
true.
It just behooves us to use it wisely and not use it on wasteful programs.
But, well, let me bring this right back around. One of the things that Obama wants to do is put more taxes on the better off,
right?
And the Republicans are very resistant against that, and are steadfast in that.
Here's my thing. I'm for taxing. If you want to raise taxes on the rich, fine. I believe you should do it. I honestly believe you should do it through the tax code. Through closing loopholes and closing special things, I agree with that. I believe in that.
Republicans don't want those loopholes closed. That's just
it. It's not that because I've heard conservatives say they do. But here's the problem. The problem is that what President Obama is saying is I think the rich should give their fair share, quote unquote fair share, or they should give more. But I just want to let you know. But what I'm hearing on the other side of that is when it's presented and saying, okay, let's do taxes, let's do fraud, waste, and abuse and get rid of the waste, let's do that also, President Obama says, I'm not doing that. The Democrats don't want to touch it. So then the Republicans feel like, and this is how I feel, why should I give you more money to waste? Jerry, you would do that with your son. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
If your son said, Dad, I need more money, and you knew your son wasn't spending the money that he already was getting on BS, on girls, women, just wasting his money. He had no car or whatever. Just say he was just wasting the money according to your standards, because I'm pretty sure you're a very reasonable man. But
sure.
I know you know what waste is when
sure,
your son's
absolutely.
Wasting it or foolish spending. If your
absolutely.
Son was doing that and kept coming back to you and saying, give me some money, I want more money, Dad, guess what you say? I'll
they
give
happen.
You more money, but you need to cut back what you're spending. You're wasting this money. I'm not going to give you more money to go drink because that's hurting you. I'm not going to give you more money to go spend on drugs and women. It's wasteful. It ain't benefiting you. And, in fact, it might even kill you. So you would be wise enough in that scenario to say, I'll give you more, but you got to be responsible with what we give you. So here's what I'm posing to you. I know that I'm not, as a conservative, against. You want more taxes? Fine. Want to close loopholes and get more money from the rich, stop the overseas crap and all that stuff? I'm with that. I'm good with that. But I've heard a lot of Republicans say They want to. The media is the only one who's saying they're resistant to it. It's not that they're resistant to it. What they're saying is, if we're going to do that, then by the same token, let's get spending, let's get a budget, let's get spending in order, let's get this fraud, waste, and abuse, let's start working on this, and then we'll give you that also. But the problem is that every time he says that, Obama says, I'm not going to do that. The Republicans, not just Obama, but Democrats say, we're not going to do that. They don't want to touch it because they scream bloody murder and swear all the poor people are going to die if we touch those entitlements or start cutting fraud, waste, and abuse. Nobody, and here's the thing, we're asking the Republicans to be involved. So guess what? You want to protect the hardworking people? I'm all for it. Protect the hardworking people who deserve it. But get rid of the fraud, waste, and abuse of the people who don't deserve it, who are cheating the system, taking millions and millions and billions of dollars every year and don't deserve it and are not and shouldn't even have it. So that's all I'm saying. But at the same time, turn around and be responsible with what you got. Be responsible. Get your house in order. Get the thing in order. And the problem is, and this is both people, is that they basically want, if we're going to do that, let's do it. Just like when they say, just like when the Republicans say, we want to secure the borders. Okay, they want to secure the borders, but Obama and the Democrats act like there's nobody coming across the border. Like, no, it's all safe out here. And it's like, no, it's not. I mean, it's not all gravy out here. So what I'm saying is, they want to do comprehensive, just like Democrats want to do comprehensive, provide a program where foreigners can come over and become aliens, you know, whatever, illegal aliens, whatever you want to call them, want to come over and be in that country. Fine, that's great. But why would you create a, think about it. If I created a program, Jerry, and I break it down even this way, with that situation, why would I make a deal with you to let in poor people who are already in this country? Let I'm gonna give it to you better. I got a bunch of vampires, and vampires are living in America, and these vampires are coming over here, and you're a supporter of the vampires coming over here, and but yet we're not securing our borders, and they're not coming over here in the way that all other people come from other countries to come over here. So then I say to you, Jerry, look. I'll do an agreement with you of a proper way to get these people in here the right way. Let's come up with a comprehensive reform for people to come over, for these vampires to come over here. Why would I go into that agreement with you before I secure the borders? Because once I make the agreement with you, guess what happens? All the vampires start running over. We ain't built no fence. We ain't fixed nothing. So you come over. So. But then the media reports it as conservatives don't want Hispanics and don't want domestic people coming over here from Mexico. No, it's not. What it is they're saying, fix the fence, set up the fence, put more forces on the ground, secure the borders, then we'll do that. That way, when we do the agreement, we'll be strong enough that everybody won't just jump over the fence and come. And then we can deal with the people that are already here and come up with something. So all I'm saying to you is that a lot of the ideas that Democrats have, I can honestly say from me listening to Republicans, listen to people who are at CPAC, listen to other people, listen to all these conservatives, they want the same thing. But on the networks that each one watches, they paint the other one. The media, and I blame them for more than anything, is if the media would get out the way and let people talk and quit putting stuff out in the air that's misinformation, it would be better.
That's why I don't pay attention to
right.
Fox. That's why I don't pay attention to MSNBC. That's why I don't pay attention to CNN, because the fact is it's leaning one way or the other, and nobody wants to give fair, unbiased opinion
on. I can't not watch it, and I'll tell you why. Because no matter what – because here's the thing. If it was just full of commentators and full of people that was just talking all day, that'd be different. But when you invite real Republicans and Democrats in, and people who are actually in and doing the work and up on the hill and stuff, I like to listen, because then I want to see what you really feel, how you really feel. I want to listen, because nobody's giving you lines to say. But I'm saying I can make up my own mind from listening to the people who are actually in the situation, as opposed to listening to a person who says, I believe in Jerryism, and I'm going to push it and force it down your damn throat. But if I hear Jerry's going to tell me if he really feels that way or not. And he's not going to try to force me.
But now, if you take CNN, take MSNBC, take Fox, they put like-minded people on all those stations, and they steer the questions or don't ask the questions that they don't want to hear.
Right.
Or a series of questions that they want to hear the answers to.
You still have,
regardless of who it is, whether it's a commentator or a guest, you still have the same type of rhetoric going on that station, and I get tired of it. That's why I don't even watch any of them stations because the fact is they steer each other. They steer whoever's the guest on, like I said, what they want them to say and what answers they want them to put out to be able to push whatever agenda that station has. So, that's exactly how I feel.
But I get you. The only reason why I don't feel that way, I check in on both every now and then just to hear. But I'll tell you what I do that most people don't do, is that when Fox quotes things and uses information that I can go freely look at, I go look and see if it's true. I don't just believe what they say. When it's .gov, .org, or if it's something else, I go look at it and I go read it and I make my mind up for myself. The problem is that everybody, black, white, Hispanic, Puerto Rican, whatever, they take the media and they're so lazy, they'll take the media for what the commentator, whoever's on their face, says, and they'll say that's what they said and they're the reliable source. Instead of getting on the internet and go look at if Bill O'Reilly says black unemployment is 14.2%, and they show when they put it up on the thing, they show source on Fox. They'll show the source and it'll say Bureau of Labor Statistics. I go on BureauOfLaborStatistics.gov and look at it, look through the whole list and as it broke down by white, black, Hispanic, and I see it, I go, oh, okay, it really is that. The problem is we don't do it, which kind of pisses me off about our people, is that we won't do it, and we just take whatever they tell us and say, that's the truth. That's what so-and-so
said. Wait a minute, Mac, you know, I get really upset when you start bashing people like that. Because the fact is, it's not just black people. People in general do not do that.
If you re-listen to the show, what I just said was I said everybody does it. I just got through saying everybody does this. They don't do their research. They don't do that. I said that. I said everybody, black, white. I said everybody. But what I did was because it's just like a family. I'm going to talk about the white man, the black man. I'm going to talk about the white man, the Chinese man, everybody else. But I'm not going to act like my family's doo-doo don't stink. So what I said was it pisses me off that we don't do that. I wasn't saying it like we're the only ones because everybody, a lot of them do it. Trust me. I've seen people interview young people that are in their 20s, and they don't know who the hell they don't even know who half their senators are. They don't know who their state senator is. They don't know what the news of the day is. They don't know nothing, but they know everything about Lil Wayne and everything about all kind of wasteful things that don't help them at all in life. So I say that, and I've seen it. White kids, black kids, Hispanic kids, Indian kids, Chinese kids. I see it. Our whole culture, the youth culture, is just like totally out of touch with what's going on in the United States, unless it's entertainment or it's got something with a star, or Jay-Z or something, or Beyonce to it. They don't know anything about it. So I agree with that, but what I'm saying is what pissed me off about my people, because they are my people, is that we should stop being so lazy and really go and see what it's all about. Because here's the thing. I really believe that there are a lot of things that conservatives and the left can agree on, but the problem is sometimes the media is in the way.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm saying they report one side one way and report one side the other way. Because me and you just sat here and had a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And we both basically agree on something. We agree in certain ways that should be handled, but we agree that the end result should be this. You don't want a $17 trillion debt. You want people to get what they need as far as with the safety nets and the other stuff. I'm pretty sure, Jerry, as a sensible man, most people are reasonable, you wouldn't want to see a guy out on the street selling EBT cards and making money off of it and giving it to people who were riding in limousines. I'm pretty sure you'd be pissed off. And I'm pretty sure if it was a young person and you thought you could say something to them, you pull them aside and say, you're hurting our people. You're hurting the cause. You're taking from other people who don't have anything. So that's what I'm saying. But the difference is that instead of the media saying conservatives want to cut out the fraud, waste, and abuse and breaking it down, and even conservatives' mistake, they don't explain it right, is explain it in detail and make an analogy and explain it to you where anybody can understand it, just like I did, You understand, I'm not saying take it from grandma and from those who need it. What I'm saying is take it from the dude who we know don't need it and just abusing it. But you agree. But see, we can sit here and agree. And that's what frustrates me about why we can't agree on Capitol Hill. It's because of worrying about being elected, worrying
yes,
about policing our constituents.
Amen.
And that's
amen
on both
to that.
Sides. And that's on both sides. And I'm not going
to
lie to you about
to
that.
That.
And I agree with that. And I think if we had people that were really up, and I think a lot of people go into politics nowadays, I think it's a racket. I think it's I get in, it's a it's a country club. I got hooked up, I got your hookup. I hook you up, you hook me up.
Right.
I take care of you, you take care of me. I wash your back, you wash mine. Which here's the thing. I'm not against that because that happens in work. That's called, it's basically a soft word for what is that when you get together and everybody talks and you meet different people or whatever? What is that called?
Networking.
Okay.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when it comes to the business of the other people, the problem is our hearts are not pure towards doing the right thing, even if it means you don't get reelected, even if it means it's not popular. You stand for what you believe and you fight for it and you do it. I can live with that. You know, even though I don't like his policies, I respect the only thing I do respect about Obama is that if he truly believes it, okay, he's gonna stand his ground. Cool, I'm good with that. I don't like it, but okay, fine. My thing is, it's on both sides that we're not compromised, and I just think that I find it hard to believe that Obama, who seems like a very nice man, would want to cut fraud, waste, and abuse out and give it to people, especially with the things that he says, and give it to the people who really need it and get rid of these people who are not doing it. But the problem is they'll say, I don't want to do that. I just want to raise taxes and get more money. You can't ask for more money to go out and drink when you're getting drunk, when you ain't handling what we're giving you already. So why would I give you more? That's all I'm saying. And I think that is what conservatives want. Conservatives just say, look, we just want a budget. We want to stop the fraud, waste, and abuse and cut it out and save it so that we're not adding to our debt. But most of the fraud, waste, and abuse and most of the debt that we're driving that's going towards that deficit is entitlement and government programs.
Tell me this, because if I'm not mistaken, I did hear this at one point that Obama did say the entitlements are on the table, but you got to come with something in order for me to be able to cut some entitlements. And from what I understand, the Republicans really haven't come with anything to warrant that. Sure they have.
They come with the Ryan budget plan. They passed two to three different.
That Ryan budget
plan.
Come on, man.
Two,
that Ryan budget plan hurts a lot of people. Lower class people, big time. So
but
come on,
ask,
man.
But let me ask you this, Jerry: have you read it?
I've read parts of it, and a lot of.
But
a
I'm
lot
just
of
saying,
that.
Read the whole. That's why you tried to
lot
me.
Of it,
read the whole
lot,
thing before.
Weeks back, when it first came out, I read it, and from what I understand, lower income people and people that are of the type that are vulnerable. He takes away from them big time over a period of years compared to what would happen with some upper income people. So come on, man.
What upper income people are, okay, then here's what I would say. Then I'm in agreement to take the upper income people off of the entitlement because I know there are some that are on it who shouldn't have it. Take it. I agree with that. But at the same time, that's not going to solve our problem because that's not going to solve our problem, even though I say it should still be done, but it won't solve our problem. But what are you going to, but here's my question. My question is, what are you going to do? What is President Obama, what are they going to do once you get everything you want? And then it makes no difference. What's going to happen then? What's going to be excused now? Well, now we want to take more because, to be honest with you, if you took from all the rich people, all the millionaires and billionaires in this country, you wouldn't put a dent in the deficit.
Well, I know that.
I guess what I'm trying to say to you is, Chase, I'm on your side about. I understand when you're saying the budget takes this, the budget takes that. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where compromise, where Obama has it, because Senator Paul Ryan is not the only one who came with something. But see, here's my problem. You say You come with something, you don't like it. Okay, I understand that. Then why doesn't the president say, okay, I like this part of it, I don't like this. I don't like this part of it, okay, maybe we can agree on this. Can we do this and this and this and this, and I don't like that. I'll come up with my own plan and present this, and we'll do this, 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 and this. But when you say, I put entitlements on the table, or when you say I do this, but you're not giving specifics. But then they turn around and say, well, they're not giving specifics. But then I see a plan that's put out, and then all the Democrats go is, we don't like it. It takes from everybody that does this and does this and does this and does this and does that. And these are the same people, I just want to hear this again, the same people who did not read the Obamacare thing when it came out and passed it. So all I'm saying is people are not reading the stuff that they're doing. And all I'm saying is,
These are our elected officials.
Right.
And as elected officials, you get paid to read any kind of legislation
exactly.
that comes across your desk and interpret it in a way that's going to benefit the country as a whole.
I agree. Here's my thing. I agree with that. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, on our side,
mm-hmm.
I've seen things presented. It's on record that we have passed bills and passed stuff, and we've sent it over to the Democrats, and it dies in there. It dies in the House. Fine. I'm not worried about that. But what I'm saying is, have the Democrats come with some things? Yes, they have. But everything with them is, let's take more, take more, take more, and there's no cuts. That's the problem. And then Obama says, well, you can't solve the whole thing with just cuts. And then we go, okay, so I understand that. But what cuts are you saying we could do in addition to what you want? But he never says that.
Well, I find that hard to believe, Mac, because this has been going on.
Then let me ask you this. Name one specific program that he's planning to change and that he said, I'm going to change this, and how?
Well, At this juncture, I can't name one, but I'm saying any reasonable person would think that if two sides are trying to come to some type of agreement, that there's going to be some give and take on both sides.
And that's the problem is that I believe that both sides are not giving and taking right. I also believe that they're not that Republicans and conservatives are not explaining it right.
Well, I mean,
what I'm saying is they're not explaining the thing right. Because think about it. Jerry, you told me what you really thought. But, Jerry, when I broke it down to you to its simplest terms, just me and you,
mm-hmm.
you understood it. You weren't stuck on stupid. You weren't like, that's totally crazy. When I gave you the analogy about your son and giving him some money, and he's going out wasting it,
and you don't want
to get more, it makes, what I'm saying is I brought it down to its simplest form.
Right.
Why can't
right.
they do that? That's not hard to understand.
I gotta believe they've done that. I gotta believe they're supposed to be smarter than you and I. Supposed to be smarter than you and I.
And just because
they're elected officials, just because they have degrees and a boatload of money, doesn't mean they can't break it down in common man's terms.
Right. I believe Romney. I believe that Romney lost the election based on the fact that he could not, nor could independent people, explain their point clearly. Because when they would say things, I would always sit there and look and be like, "But you're not explaining that right. You're letting the media determine. You're letting them get the final word of what you really mean, instead of you taking the time to get on TV and say, this is what I meant." And break it down to us to where even a
regardless of who's talking, and he's on film or he's on audio tape of what he said, they have handlers, they have people behind them, they have people that are analyzing what this person just said and saying, oh, he didn't say that right, this is what he needed to say, and go to that person or go to whoever is his chief of staff and saying, he's not saying it right. He's getting the wrong message out. This is what he needs to say and how he needs to break it down.
I think that these people are no smarter than me and you. But here's what I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
It's a classic example. instead of Romney saying that on tape saying that 47% of them of the United States are takers or whiners
mm-hmm.
or want to be dependent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I believe that, but here's the difference. The difference is I would have never said it that way. What I would have said, to make it simple, is there is a huge percentage of people on the Democratic side or in this country that just want a free ride. They want
a check
that doesn't belong.
Wait a minute
now,
see, you can't say it on the Democratic side.
But I would have, listen to me, but I would have never said the 47.
Well, you can't say it on the Democratic side. Come on, man.
Okay. Well,
it's not on the Democratic side. You're trying to tell me all the Democrats are whoever is taking that 40%. Wait a minute. All the people that are in that 47%.
Because
what you just said was all those people in that 47%.
I'm using his words. I'm not saying those are my words. I'm saying how
mm-hmm.
I would have said it differently. What
mm-hmm.
I would have said was there is a, even if I'm telling the truth, I would have said there's a big percentage of people on the other side. Maybe not Democrat. Other side, Democrat, whatever. Doesn't matter. There are people.
It sure matters.
Well, it does, but why?
Sure, it matters because if you say there's a huge amount of people on the Democratic side that are taking fraud, waste, and abuse, or you say that 47% of the people are Democrats that are not paying taxes. I think that's what he said, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe not. He didn't say Democrats, but he said 47%.
Right.
Are not paying taxes.
Right,
but
which is true.
But he never broke it down.
But I'm saying he never broke it down to a simplest form. Which what he should have said was, there are people out here who are doing fraud, waste, and abuse. There are people who are getting disability checks that shouldn't happen. There are people who are getting food stamps that shouldn't happen. There are people who are getting. If you break it down like that, who's going to get mad and say, you're full of shit? Because now I'm not singling out individual people and using names. I'm saying there are people.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. Common sense is most of the people in America know somebody who's doing it. Unless you live on Park Avenue or you live in certain places, you know somebody or somewhere where you can get that, where you know people are doing that. You know that. And then I would have presented the numbers. There are now 50-some percent of the households in America that are now getting disability. 4 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever, it was this. And you use facts and figures. Instead of just wiping the brush across and saying 40% of these people are all takers, it was just said wrong. And that's why I said, I really honestly think that some of these people don't have tact. They don't understand about how you say it. They do to an extent, but I don't think they really understand, like, what you're supposed to say. And you know what I really think it is? I think it's the way you're brought up. Because think about it. If I'm brought up in an affluent neighborhood, I don't know nothing about scheming Rodney. I don't know nothing about stinking Lincoln down the street. I don't know
mm-hmm.
about the people standing on the corner smoking weed and how they talk. I don't know
right.
how to break it down to a guy and going to another neighborhood, and I got to get through that neighborhood, and I got to break it down and talk to him a whole different way and carry a whole different
right.
attitude.
Right.
I don't know that. These are people of privilege. So if I get an advisor with a person of privilege, he don't know nothing about how to change up with Rodney, how to do this, how to do that, how to do that. Even Obama knows enough to go into a church and start to talk like he's preaching.
Right.
He's on the pulpit. He
mm-hmm.
changed his whole dialect. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it,
mm-hmm.
but okay, fine. It's common. If I go into a certain neighborhood,
I'm gonna talk to a certain way.
Right. Right.
Exactly.
So I give that to him. Now.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I'm trying to say to you is I just think that the people who are handling these people, government people, officials, whatever, especially in the election, don't know how to break it down to make people understand it and change it. So it comes across, so somebody can get the point but not get offended as much as they would if you just say it the wrong way. So
mm-hmm.
I give it to you. So I say I think that what I just showed you was that two people can sit down together and come to an agreement, and in general, as human beings, and say, you know what, I agree with that. I might agree in a different way than you do, and I may agree in a different way, but you know what, I'm good with it. So, you know, as I said, if we can do it, why can't they? And that's the problem, I think. And the difference is we don't have a job out on the line.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is we don't have constituents that we have to answer for, except for our families. So this is not something that's, you know, gone from us. And here's what kills me the most about it, though, is that most of the people who are in, who are afraid of losing, or afraid of not of being voted out or what have you, are affluent people.
Yes.
They don't worry about another job ever in their life. Like,
yes.
That would
yes.
leave me free to do whatever the hell
yep.
I want. You say, go
exactly.
home. Okay, I'm going home.
Yes. All right,
I'll go home, drink some lemonade, I'll go travel the world, go do something else.
Right.
Okay, cool. But I'm going to stand for what I believe. And that's what I don't understand.
And they've made enough money or enough connections to be able to be set for life. So it's
oh,
not
man.
Like they're going to be lost if they lose their seat.
And
that boggles my mind.
Hey, how many guys, listen to me, how many guys get out of public service? You got press secretaries who leave and go write books and become on TVs and become anchors and get paid. You got former senators and governors and all these people who go and start different organizations, to nonprofit organizations, to push their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting paid off of it because a nonprofit, it pays them. So I'm just saying, these guys are not destitute. They have the means to go on in life and become powerful in a different way, without out of the spotlight. I mean, they talk about. You talk about the conservatives and Democrats. Both sides start up organizations when they get out. Start up their own organizations to push their agenda, whether it's left or right or whatever. So, you know, like I said, for me, and I end the conversation with this way, but I just say it this way. If me and you can sit down and do it, why can't they? And that's the most frustrating thing about it. And, you know, yes, I'm a conservative. Yes, I stick to my values. Yes, I believe in certain things, and we're going to disagree on things. But the general premise, we may differ on the procedure and how to do it. But we do want to, basically at the core of us want to do the same thing, you know. But like I said, the only thing that bothered me this week is when Obama said that $17 trillion was sustainable. I was like, you're drunk. I don't know what's wrong with you, but that's not cool for us to have that. And people say it's not that much. I'm like, you're nuts, you know. So I would encourage you to listen to that thing from the prayer breakfast. Just listen to it, and then give me the feedback.
I have it sitting in front of me,
and give me
the
feedback, and give me your feedback, whether it's by text or whatever, of what you think about it. Before we leave, I just want to let everybody know I am going away on a trip. So next Friday, it's all you, Jerry.
Okay.
And whoever guest you want to have or what have
right.
you. I will return on that next Friday after that, which should be, I think, the 29th or something like that. And
mm-hmm.
I'll be back then. I'm working on a few guests. But until then, we're taking a little break, and we're just going to talk about news of the day until I get another guest. I want to let you know that, and my audience know, that Sylvia Crawley has decided that she does want to do a radio show on our network. But I need
mm-hmm.
to talk to her about a few things and work
mm-hmm.
with Victor to see what we can do. I think that would be quite a coup for
sure
us.
Would sure
and
would
think, and she thinks she can really make a difference with her show after what we did, so we can always say that we were the co-founders of that show. So
we were launching
we
point
started,
you gave,
right,
her, gave
started,
her the bug
right we started a movement. So when I get back from Vegas, I will definitely have different news and things that I'll be talking about.
No doubt.
I'm going to try to go by and to Floyd Mayweather's training camp.
Okay.
And go see what he's doing. And hopefully I can come back, and maybe we can get Ellerby, his manager, or maybe we can even get the man himself on. So we just never know how God's going to work that out. But I'm definitely going to go and have a good time with the wife and enjoy it. And we will hook up Friday on the 29th. Until then, Jerry, I appreciate you, man. I can't believe it. We need to go to Congress, and we need to get a job up there. And we
yeah,
need
you're
to,
right.
We, and just let everybody leave us in the room. I think we can work it out.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
I just hope that they come around. But until then, we just keep praying and keep pulling our hair out and banging our head on the wall, hoping that one day they will get it together. Either that, or we're going to turn into Switzerland, and then there'll be people in the streets mad because they don't get Medicare anymore. with that said, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for being on.
Same here.
Thanks for coming this week. I hope you have
no
a great
problem.
Week and a great
you
time.
Do the same.
And please
enjoy
come
Vegas.
Back next week. Yes, I will. And come back next week and listen to Jerry and whatever guest he has and whatever he wants to talk about. And until then, man, I will see you next week. And that's it. Have good. Have
All
fun,
right.
my friend.
You too. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
No music.
Oh, Jesus.
No nothing.
Right.
I'm frozen.
That's crazy. Yeah, well, you make sure you get the message out to those guys and get them.
Definitely do that.
Yeah,
and then
text me and let me know if everything's okay or whatever. I might even give you a call. Who knows? While I'm in there, or text you while I'm in Vegas. So,
no problem. All right, man.
All right, Jerry. I'll talk to you later, man. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Right.
Bye-bye.
See you.